Hello and welcome to Pod Rights. This is a series of podcasts from the Australian Human Rights Commission. I'm Graham Innes, the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. We mostly think about education, particularly school education, as a local issue. The school we went to, the teachers we liked, or the ones we had a crush on, the subjects that we didn't enjoy. But the organisation and planning for school education is done at a state and national level, and at present, Australia is in the midst of discussions around the development of a national curriculum for our schools. Now, how is this a human rights issue, you might be saying? Well, to answer that question, I'm joined on Pod Rights by the Director of Community Engagement at the Human Rights Commission, Annie Pettit. Dr. Pettit has been with the Commission for 2 years, heading up the team responsible for human rights education and community engagement. And Annie, if I can refer to you by your first name, has a PhD in human rights and policing with the School of Political and Social Inquiry at Monash University in 2009. She has extensive experience in human rights education, engagement and capacity building. So welcome to Pod Rights, Annie.
Thanks, Graham.
So firstly, why do we need human rights education?
Well, human rights education is about building a culture of respect for human rights. It's not only about providing knowledge about human rights and the mechanisms to protect them, but it's about imparting skills that are needed to promote, defend and apply human rights in daily life.
And how will that sort of education benefit students and schools?
Well, through learning about what human rights are, but also about the skills and values of human rights, students will benefit in their relationships, in how they approach life. And there's, in fact, evidence to show that when students are provided with skills and knowledge around human rights, that they in fact, the prevalence of bullying is reduced, together with increased learning outcomes and just better relationships in the school environment.
Okay, so there's some real practical benefits for day-to-day school activities and education.
Absolutely.
How do we compare internationally on this issue, Annie? What's happening in other countries?
Well, it's hard to make that comparison, in fact, Graham, because human rights education is not a subject in Australia, and in fact is not taught consistently across Australia, which is why the development of the national curriculum is such an exciting and unique opportunity for us. But what I can say is that there are some really valuable examples of some work being undertaken overseas. For example, UNICEF in the UK has been pioneering a program called Rights Respecting School Awards. And in this program, schools are awarded and recognised for incorporating the Convention on the Rights of the Child into their planning, practice and ethos.
Okay.
So it's not just about teaching students about human rights and children's rights, but it's actually about providing the learning environment and the whole school community environment with an environment of respect and recognition of human rights.
Well, that's really interesting. Are there other countries which are doing similar things or other things that...
There are some really interesting programs in New Zealand as well. Similarly, taking an approach of a human rights based approach to education, which is really about respecting children and young people, valuing their views and opinions, and having them participate as agents in the school environment and decision making in the school, and the outcomes from these programs are really excellent to see in terms of learning outcomes improved, and as I mentioned, the reduction in bullying and discrimination are significant.
What's the national curriculum got to do with human rights education, and why is it important, Annie?
Well, the national curriculum is being developed at the moment by the Australian Curriculum Reporting and Assessment Authority, ACARA, and it's a phased process. So some subjects have already been developed and approved, and some are still in development. And at the Commission, we see it as a unique opportunity to integrate human rights into the curriculum, because this is really the first time in any subject area or learning area that there will be a consistent curriculum taught across the country. So the other thing that's quite exciting about the national curriculum is it's not just a curriculum of subject areas, so English, maths, history, science, but ACARA has taken the approach of developing some things called general capabilities, which are about the skills and values and attributes we expect that students will have at the end of their learning. And in this area, there are a couple of general capabilities that are particularly relevant to human rights, and they are things like ethical behaviour, cross-cultural competence, and interpersonal and social competence. So you can see that those are areas that that have a resonance with human rights, and they really are the background behind the curriculum. So curriculum drafters are asked to incorporate these general capabilities or skills and attributes into the curriculum that they are writing. So it's not that students will be assessed on these, but this is just what we say are important skills and values.
And you've talked about what's in the curriculum, and it's pretty important to have a similar approach, isn't it, for the delivery of education across the country?
Yeah, it is really important, and because we have seen across Australia that the students are learning different things and to a different level in different states and territories, and that's why the development of the national curriculum is a really significant milestone and a way of guaranteeing that all students across Australia have the same access and potential to learn and engage in the same learning areas.
And that's really important, you know, across the board, isn't it, for people themselves, but also for employers, for higher learning institutions to know that people have covered off the same sorts of issues. There's a whole range of reasons for consistency being important, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one unique area with the national curriculum is that for the first time there will actually be a national subject area on civics and citizenship. And until now, civics and citizenship has been taught in different ways in different states and territories. So in some states and territories there is a specific subject area called civics and citizenship. In others it's actually integrated into subjects like geography or social studies. So this is the first time that there'll actually be a national subject on civics and citizenship, and obviously for human rights there is particular resonance with civics and citizenship.
Well, I wanted to come to that, but just before I do, I suppose the other important thing from the Commission's point of view and from a range of other people's point of view is that this is a unique opportunity to get material into a nationally agreed upon curriculum, rather than trying to work with one state and another territory and a far more piecemeal approach. So that's a real advantage as well, isn't it?
It really is. And having been a human rights educator for many years now, and I've been involved in many attempts to work with education departments to integrate human rights into state or territory school curriculums, and that has been one of the most significant hurdles for us, really, is that with limited resources to attempt to work with each state and territory separately, it's been a really significant barrier. So this is a really unique opportunity. For us.
Yeah. How broad is human rights education? I mean, is it just about educating children about the Convention on the Rights of the Child that you've already mentioned and the other UN conventions?
No, human rights education is much broader than just teaching students about what human rights are. As it's understood at an international level, there are three major elements to human rights education.
Mm-hmm.
And the first is the acquisition of knowledge and skills. The second is the development of respectful values and attitudes and changed behaviour that I've mentioned.
Yep.
And the third, in fact, is the motivation of social action and the empowerment of active citizenship. So,
right.
So really what we're working towards is having students know about what their rights are and what the rights of others are and how they can respect those rights,
mm-hmm.
Having them develop respectful values and attitudes and behaviours. And then thirdly, about being active citizens and engaging in and perhaps when they are a witness to something, when they see someone else being bullied or discriminated against, actually taking some action to improve that situation.
But why do we need to extend what we've done? I mean, don't students already learn about those sorts of issues in subjects like civics and citizenship?
Well, in civics and citizenship, students learn about the laws of the country, the political system that we have, what is a democratic system. But the imparting of the values and attitudes is not has not always been part of what civics and citizenship is about.
Mm.
And that's why our view is that to improve the integration of human rights in the curriculum, we really need to look across the whole curriculum. And this can be done as simply as providing examples or elaborations that have a relevance to human rights. For example, in history or geography, when teachers are teaching about a particular area, the examples that they might use could be human rights examples.
Okay, and that's the work, much of the work that you've been involved in, isn't it? Because you've been looking at the various curriculum subjects and trying to have that sort of input. Can you give us an example of something in history or geography or in another subject where that sorts of human rights focus might be relevant?
Mm. In the history curriculum, there is there are a range of areas where human rights are relevant, obviously. And, for example, in modules looking at World War II, the Commission has liaised with ACARA and discussed the incorporation of the establishment of the United Nations as a result of World War II, and really why that came about as a result of the Holocaust and the steps that the international community took to address that situation and to attempt to ensure that it doesn't happen again. Similarly, in Year 10, there's an in-depth study on rights and responsibilities, and some of the contributions that the Commission made specifically related to the kinds of examples that were to be incorporated and used in that subject area. For example, we discussed with ACARA not only talking about the civil rights movement, but using Australian examples, for example, of the freedom rides here that took place and how they have impacted Australian society. Similarly, there are international conventions that have been incorporated into Australian law. So when students are being taught about rights and responsibilities, like the women's rights movement, they will now learn that the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women exists, but that we also have the Sex Discrimination Act. So to create a system where all of those pieces of the puzzle are actually linked together.
And I mean, that practical impact is really important, isn't it? I mean, the Freedom Ride was all about travelling through New South Wales, being able to get into hotels and restaurants and places like that, something that people can relate to because they do it all the time.
That's right. And it's really important with human rights education that it relates to people's lives and that they can make sense of what that means for them in their lives. So using examples and stories that are relevant to people, and in this case to students in schools, is so important, because developing an understanding of human rights is very much about developing an empathy and an understanding of these issues, but also of different people's experiences in life.
Yeah, and maybe being able to relate it to your own experience too.
That's right.
Yeah. So where's the process up to on the national curriculum, Annie? What can people do if they're interested in engaging in the consultations around this?
Well, the ACARA is running extensive consultations around the national curriculum. Mm-hmm. Some subjects, as I have mentioned, have already been developed. So the phase one subjects of English, history, science and maths have already been finalised. So that curriculum is developed and it is being trialled and implemented in some states already. The phase two subjects are in varying stages of development. So I believe that geography, for example, the curriculum has, the consultation on that draft curriculum has just finished and is in the process of being developed into the final form.
Right.
And civics and citizenship is in its early stages of development. So the ACARA is currently developing a shape paper, which will be out for consultation around June, July. There'll be a consultation period. And from that, towards the end of this year and early next year, there'll be the draft curriculum that will again be out for consultation. If people are interested, they can first of all go to our website to find out information about what we're doing around human rights and the national curriculum. But they can also go directly to ACARA's website just to see the progress of the curriculum and how to engage. But it's a very open and very consultative process that they're engaging in.
And as you say, people can look at our work on our website at www.humanrights.gov.au. Let's finally take a forward view. You've said that this is important work, but what will it mean to future generations of Australians that they've grown up with the sort of human rights education in schools that you've envisaged and talked about today? How will the schoolyard, the classroom, and the approach be different as a result of that work?
Well, our hope, obviously, is that it improves relationships between people. It has it reduces bullying, increases learning outcomes, and school retention. And builds empathy amongst people, and students can build that empathy in the playground, but also they go on to being adults and citizens in our community. So the more opportunities that they have to develop human rights values and attitudes and behaviours, they'll take that out into their working lives, into their family lives, and knowing that human rights isn't just about learning about what the rights are, but about instilling values and attitudes and behaviours. It should be a ripple effect, and really should and reduce discrimination and improve health and well-being and relationships.
So just like all sorts of other facets of education, you know, it's building human rights into people's lives and aiming to ensure that follows through. So thanks very much, Annie. It's great to have a better understanding of this process, and pleasing to see human rights education being locked into our education. Thank you.
Thanks, Graham.
And thanks to all of you listening to PodRights. Remember, this podcast is for you. So if you have a suggestion of someone with whom I should talk or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au or find me and message me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graham Innes, GraemInnes. Also, if you want to engage more on human rights issues, have a look at tellmesomethingidontknow.gov.au, our Something in Common project, where you can read fascinating human rights facts and stories, participate in polls, add your own content, and find out what you can do to advance human rights issues in Australia. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next Podrights in the series, because human rights are for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graham Innes. Goodbye for now.